old-timer.
Jerry Pippin, it's number one.
We do have the number one song in 1957 coming up here in a minute, so stay tuned. Welcome back to our special built around the Tulsa Time Capsule. By now, you know, the Plymouth came out very rusted, but it still had a little chrome that was shiny. It was buried June 15, 1957, and unearthed 50 years later this weekend. Let's take a look at what was happening in the news that week. Back in 1957, the trial of James R. Hoffa, the powerful Midwest Teamster boss, was underway, and the move for integration was moving forward ever so slowly, even back in 1957. Southern blocks of congressmen succeeded in blocking jury trials for civil rights violators. It would be several years yet before any meaningful civil rights laws would be passed by the federal government. At Radio City Music Hall, Marilyn Monroe and Laurence Olivier were starring in The Prince and the Showgirl. Number one on the charts that year from Billboard magazine was a song by Pat Boone, Love Letters in the Sand. That's right. It was a battle for the hearts and minds of America between Elvis Presley and Pat Boone in 1957, and it's hard to believe, but Mr. Clean Cut was the winner as far as the top 100 singles. At least he had the number one position. You think the thing was fixed? Elvis fans, never fear. We have a great Elvis story coming up here in a moment when we return to our guest, Mike Miller. But first, let's give Mr. Boone and his white buckskins their dues. Here he is with the number one song of 1957.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sun. Take our love letters from the sand. You made a vow that you would ever be true, but somehow
Miller is our guest. We're chatting with Maul and Muskogee, where we're talking with Mike Miller about the 50s and 60s and television and radio, especially centered around Tulsa. We just played Pat Boone. Mike, you actually met Elvis Presley, didn't you? In person?
Yeah.
In
Las Vegas. Had a friend of mine at the Sahara from Tulsa that I had gone to school with, named Gary King, and I had gone out. I quit my job at K2L Radio, and I guess you read this and How High Can a Guy Stoop, but we got out after drinking around Vegas, different places. We stopped in at the Sahara Casino, and I looked out of my corner of my eye, and I see Elvis was sitting at a at a roulette table, and he was surrounded by bodyguards, and his nice knockout, you know, blonde, and I was just drunk enough to go up and introduce myself as a disc jockey from Tulsa. Play your records all the time, Elvis, which was a lie because
our you were a good music station.
We were a good music station. KKC.
Right.
He was on KKC, our competitors.
Yeah.
But he was gracious, polite. He introduced me to his date, Juliet Prowse, and I guess they were dating a little bit then. And in fact, I think they were appearing in a movie together.
And Juliet was very friendly too.
She was very good. I told her I taught dancing, and she was
open type blouses.
Yeah, saw the couple of mound of freckles there. Being very careful that Elvis didn't see me seeing
right,
mound of freckles. But after about 5 minutes of chit chat, we decided to not overstay our welcome. And
well, that's probably considerate of you.
Yeah, but you know it. Remarkable. At the time, you don't think that's such a big deal, but you know, he was a big star. But you don't, you know, he's become even bigger. I think today you got to say he's probably the biggest.
Our Elvis section on our website rivals anything else we do consistently. Always more visitors, more hits. Always at the top.
Yeah, you don't realize, you know, that what a historical meeting you're meeting this
guy.
Okay,
Mike, we're gonna make you 50 years later a truth teller. Now we're going to play Elvis Presley right here. Mike Miller introducing. You don't want to do it? Okay, I will. Elvis Presley, one of the big songs of 57. I want you to be my teddy bear.
Oh, baby, let me be your little teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be your teddy bear. I don't want to be a tiger. This tiger's way too rough. I don't want to be a lion, 'cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. But as I want to be your teddy bear, put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be your teddy bear. Baby, let me be around you every night. Run your fingers through my hair and cuddle me real tight. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be
your teddy bear. I don't wanna be a tiger, 'cause tigers play too rough. I don't wanna be a lion, 'cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. I don't wanna be your teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be
your teddy bear. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be your teddy bear.
I just wanna be your.
Well, there you've heard it. Mike Miller and Elvis Presley, pals. And shared the same girlfriend, almost. Actually, Mike Miller, you've met some pretty terrific people, some big stars over the years. One of the things in the book, How High Can a Guy Stoop, your autobiography of sorts, you talk about your encounter with Bob Hope.
Bob Hope was terrific. I found that when you in the news business, you interview a lot of celebrities, but it seems like the bigger they are,
the nicer
they are. And if they're not quite that big, they're not very nice.
No, they're not. If they're this is my theory on that, because I've been in the same situation you have. The middle guys, they're really want to block anybody from getting close to them because they're trying to go to the top. The big guys, they know they're okay, so they don't have to worry about it. So they're open to talking to everybody.
Yeah.
And then the middle tier people, the people I try to steer away from.
Oh, my image and all this stuff. And they're so taken with themselves.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I interviewed him for 15 minutes.
And the tape recorder didn't work, right?
Somebody tipped me off. He was at the Mayo Hotel in Tulsa, and I called and woke him up about three times before he said, "Come up. You're not going to give up, are you?" And I set up the tape recorder, and 15 minutes later, I checked it, and for some reason, it didn't record. And I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I woke him up three times and then recorded him, and it didn't record. And he was so gracious, he said, "Just back it up, let's do it again."
Yeah.
And he was great.
You had to deal with Phyllis Diller, who is one of my favorite people.
I've got a great Phyllis Diller story in the book, How High Can a Guy Stoop? I've got to get that in there every once in a while. Phyllis, I was at Channel 6 in Tulsa, and I decided to play a little practical joke on the anchor man, who was Clayton Vaughn at the time.
And originally Clayton had been over KAKC, and you were KTUL radio.
Right.
In fact, we even worked for Clayton at one time.
At one time, yeah, at KAKC. Yeah. And so I asked, after we did the interview, I said to Phyllis, I said, "Why don't we pull a gag on our anchor man, and I'll ask you, you've been in Tulsa," and this is the way I did it. I said, and she went for it. She said, "Oh, this is great. I'll do it."
Yeah.
I said, "You've been in Tulsa just a short time, but what do you think of Clayton Vaughn?" And Phyllis started that patented billowing laughter that she has, you know, "Oh, Clayton Vaughn," and she just howling and laughing so hard she fell off the couch. And then right then, we didn't tell Clayton that we were going to do this.
It came up back
to Clayton on set, and he was staring at the monitor, and, you know, I was sore from just laughing at Phyllis, but Clayton was just plain sore. He didn't appreciate it at all. But everybody else did. So.
Well, that's what made it funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those days, you don't see that sort of thing happening anymore. I mean, those are part of the golden days.
It's certainly true. You've interviewed everybody. We mentioned Bob Hope, a lot of politicians, even Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa was wild because we went out to the Tulsa International Airport. We tipped that she was arriving out there, and sure enough, there's no one there. You know, some priests and nuns, a couple of them. And she steps off the plane, and I ask her if could I interview her, and she was very gracious. She says, "Sure." And there was something about her. She was radiating this warmth, goodness. I mean, it's like you're interviewing a living saint.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost intimidated me to the point where I didn't get tongue-tied. But she had a great sense of humor. She was actually very funny. And just one of the most memorable interviews.
We're going to do another hour later because you'll be coming back.
I hope so.
And you're going to have some book signings and some things like that in the future. But we have to touch on politics just briefly here.
Sure.
Basically, tell me the Chick Heck story. Now, you worked for him a long time.
Right.
He's Senator Republican from Nevada. By all accounts, pretty nice fellow.
Great guy. He was so non-political. He was an admirer of Ronald Reagan, and he was heavily influenced by Paul Laxalt. Senator Laxalt had been the governor and then was senator. They'd both Chick had been in the legislature and had grown very close to the governor, Laxalt, and they had been very close. So when Chick was the senatorial committee sent me out there in that race, and then when Chick won, he asked me to be his communications director, his press secretary, and so I served with him not only in the campaign, but his whole six-year term. But one funny story about Chick, the White House was going to send Reagan out 2 days before the election to help boost Chick's campaign, and the media just hated Chick.
They did.
Oh, well, they just ignored him. They didn't think he had a chance against Senator Howard Cannon, the incumbent, and so they just ignored him. And so the White House, they said to Chick, "You're only going to introduce the president. You're going to stand up there at the rally and say, 'Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.' That's it. Nothing more. Don't say anything more." Well, I said, "Chick, the press is ignoring you now. If you do something like that and don't say anything,
right,
they're going to really have an excuse to ignore you. And first impressions in politics are so important. So I banged out a little speech for him, about a 45-second speech, thanking Reagan for coming to Las Vegas and giving tourism a boost because he was going to spend the night there at the Sands. And so we had this nice little speech, and his political consultant he had said, yeah, this is great. You got to speak, Chick. You can't just go up there and say, introduce the president. So he was going to give him some boots, some tuxedo boots from the store he owned at Western Emporium. And he said, bring these boots to me right before the program begins. And I said, Chick, I don't think that's a good idea. You better keep these boots with you. The Secret Service might not let me approach you. You're going to be with the presidential party and all that. Yeah, no, don't worry about it. So as soon as I walked in with the boots, they were confiscated by the Secret Service, and this advance man took them. And he said, no, you can't do this. Not part of the program. You can't do the boots. And so he took the boots away, and I said, you're going to be sorry. So anyway, Chick walks up to the platform, and one of the White House advance men whispers in his ear, Chick, remember, you're not to make any speeches. You just introduce the president. So Chick is just terrified, you know. He didn't want to cross the White House, but he knew we were upset if he didn't follow our advice. So he did go up there, and he gave the speech. He didn't remember it giving it later. He just was a blank.
So he was terrified.
He was terrified, but he did a great job. Mm-hmm. And then after Reagan's speech, Chick walked up, and he said, I'd like to present this pair of tuxedo boots from my Western Emporium store. Mike, where are those boots? And, of course, I'm at the back of the hall in a roped-off area, and this White House advance man is kicking his foot up in the air and tearing out his hair, and he's red as a beet. I said, I told you it was going to be very embarrassing. Everybody, you know, Reagan shrugged, Chick shrugged, no boots. Would have been a good picture.
Yeah.
But you can't anticipate every situation in politics.
You know, Las Vegas Sun in February had an interesting story I did not know about Kerry saving Heck's life. Is that true?
That's true. One day, this must have been in the late
Kerry.
John Kerry of Massachusetts, mm-hmm. in the probably the most liberal member of the Senate, certainly one of them, and Chick was one of the most conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, I guess they were eating lunch in the senator's dining room over at the Capitol, and Chick choked on a piece of meat, and he went out in the hall, and he was about to die. And Senator Kerry did the Heimlich maneuver on him and got the food dislodged. And so the next day, Chick set up a meeting in Senator Kerry's office where all of Chick's staff went over there and to thank Senator Kerry for saving our jobs.
Yeah, right.
He was very charming. And you know, I was very impressed with Kerry, but I don't think all of it came across during the campaign.
No, that's one of the things, and we're almost out of time, but that's one of the things about politics, about television, as a journalist, a newsman, entertainers. Some guys, it just doesn't translate. Others...
Yeah, off camera, they're great, but yeah, once you turn it on, they get stiff.
And others who are just boring come out well.
Yeah, it's hard to figure. It's really hard to figure.
I think of the cold personality, cool, Mr. Cool, seems to play well.
Yeah, it does. I don't know.
See, you're laid back, and so let's raise your hand. You look really good.
Well, thanks.
I'm very, frenetic, and I've done television, but it's tough to cool down.
Oh, yeah. It really is. But, you know, you mentioned before how things have changed in 30 years, 35 years. Not only radio and television, when it used to be fun, I don't think it's fun anymore. It's become cutthroat. Consultants make decisions, and have nothing to do with the news.
Oh, I know, and the political front, that could be a whole subject of a show. Politicians don't think anymore. They talk to the consultants. It's just like, in my opinion, broadcast radio has refined itself out of existence. It's so boring because they take rid of all the negatives. It's not fun anymore.
That's right.
And the guys, one or two around that still are able to do that because their names do have big audiences because people could identify. But back in our days when we first started, we were all characters.
That's right. We didn't know what we were doing.
That's right.
That probably made it more.
Well, yeah, you talk about KTUL radio when they had sold and they had 4 or 5 months. Probably had higher ratings than
any guy. Sure. It's too bad we didn't have that recorded for posterity. But the station had been sold, but there's a lag time before you get the FCC's approval, and so during that time...
You all were working, but you knew it would probably be history.
Oh, well, yeah, we didn't care what was said, so we spent all of our time trying to break each other up, and mostly it was done through the intercom between the control room and the newsroom. Usually you'd only speak on that intercom during commercials and tell the guy, you'll have like 30 seconds coming out of this commercial, but now... Because the station had been sold, we didn't care. So we would just right in the middle of his newscast say, "You're doing a great job, man. Keep it up. You know,
right.
Speed it up. You're lagging."
Yeah, I like the Ku Klux Klan show.
Oh yeah, and then we, one day,
this will be a good way to close the show.
During the civil rights news was all happening in there, and the intercom said, came on, the newsman was reading one of those civil rights stories and. Intercom said, "You're doing a great job, man," in a deep southern voice. And here is, he looks up to see this guy waving a torch dressed in a white cape, you know, and it looked like a Klansman. And he was this burning torch going back and forth, you know, and it's kind of hard to. It just breaks your train of thought, you know,
yeah,
when you
right.
see Klansmen in the control room while you're reading a civil rights story. But they lawn sprinklers would go off next to you.
Yeah, they took a lawn sprinkler in one time. You got some great stories in this book, and I can't recommend it highly enough. They can order it, of course, at the usual places, and we have a link to it as well, "How High Can a Guy Stoop?" by Mike Miller. And Myron, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's his real name, folks.
Yeah. I changed that when I reached the age of reason, hopefully. But buy the book. I think you'll enjoy it. And it's a little different slant on radio, TV, news, and politics, and it's more what really goes on and not just what you think is going on.
Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Muskogee, Oklahoma, at Shadowwood Mall, Entertainment Mall, the home of the movie company, a couple of radio stations upstairs, and our palatial studio here in the lobby.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thank you, Jerry. I enjoyed it.
Roberta Scott on location producer. Also some information from our researcher, Jane Swartling. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.
Give it